When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
You're listening to the Voices of the Vic podcast with Ben Ayton and Mike Duffy. This episode contains some strong language.
Hello and welcome to the Voices of the Vic podcast with me, Mike Duffy, James Batchelor and Ben Ayton. We're delighted to be back after an international break because who really likes international breaks? Nobody. I'm convinced that even the England players don't really give a shit as well. That's why half of them pull out. But yeah, we're back and I say this every pod, right? I say at the end of every pod, let's hope we're back next week and talking about a victory. We're back and we're talking about a victory. Watford running out 4-1 winners against Manchester United. Yeah, that's right. Don't adjust your phone or whatever you're listening to. We beat Man United 4-1. I called it as well. Just saying, I wasn't gonna blag or anything, but I did call it. I said in this run, we can definitely get a result against Man U. Certainly didn't see it being 4-1. But as I said, here to talk to me about it is James and Ben, as always. Ben, coming to you first. Result aside, how's your week been? Obviously, like I say, we've had an international break. There wasn't any content from us. We've had a nice week break and everything else. What have you done with your week since we last spoke?
Played football Monday night. We won our final game of the season. We came back from 2-0 down to win 4-2. I finished top goal scorer for my team. I'm about 13 goals off from hitting 50 goals for the club now. Oof. So I'm chasing down that record. And then just working during the week. And then last night, the reason why we're recording late is because I went out to London last night. I went to see my favourite band play last night. Don't laugh, everyone. It's McFly, all right? So I went to see them at the O2 with the missus last night. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Quality as per usual. And yeah, that's why we're recording tonight. So apologies that everyone's had to wait an extra 24 hours for this podcast.
Got kicked out of Strictly though, didn't he, Tom?
Oh, mate. He was fuming. You could tell he was really annoyed when he was performing on a stage. It looked like he didn't want to be there. But yeah. The moment Mike told me that he was in the bottom two in Strictly and told me who he was against... you just knew he was going to go. It's unfortunate as well because he was doing well and improving week in, week out. But yeah, this is turning into a Strictly podcast.
It is,
really,
man. Strictly, if the BBC are listening on the off chance and do want a Strictly Come Dancing podcast, we're available. You know what I mean?
Mate, you made me laugh last night when you was messaging me. He was like, I thought he was going to go all the way and watch it, but just, like three messages before that, you told me you'd not even watched an episode of this series. How did you think he was going to win it?
I've not watched an episode, but I just know that he's got a background of like musical theatre and all that. So I thought if anyone was gonna, you know, go and win it, I thought it'd be him. So yeah,
it was the two choices of songs, though, weren't it? Like you said, it was like Footloose versus Les Mis, and there's two totally different songs, and you know which ones would be more favourable and who would probably come up better than the other. But yeah, that's enough Strictly for one night. James, are you a Strictly fan?
I watch it on the odd occasion. I quite like my musical theatre, so I did watch about half of the musical episode the other week, or last weekend I should say. And yeah, I thought it was alright, but I wouldn't say I'm a Strictly Super fan, no.
just yeah, that surprises me that you don't watch that amongst the other show that you usually watch.
What was it? Family Fortune.
Family Fortune.
Oh, fantastic. Love it, still... Gino DeCampo.
Oh yeah, no, I thought it was still. This is how long it's been since I've watched it. I was going to say, is it still Vernon Kay? But yeah, he hasn't done it in a while.
Oh, was it before him? Les Dennis, wasn't it?
Les Dennis, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was before I was born, though. So
yeah, showing your age. Yeah.
Have you boys started watching I'm a Celebrity yet?
I tell you what.
Oh, I watched it last night.
People are going to be tuning in thinking, is this Voices of the Vic? Am I listening to the Watford podcast about Watford beating Man U 4-1? Am I listening to like a TV catch-up podcast? We'll get on to Corrine a bit, maybe EastEnders, maybe flirt around the edges with Emmerdale. We'll see how far we can get, but I haven't watched, out of interest, I haven't watched I'm a Celeb, but it's a terrible lineup. Although I think I've
They tend to be the good lineups when they're a terrible lineup, though.
David Ginola's hilarious. Like even in the first episode, I can tell he's going to be like one of the funny people this time.
I think it'll be Richard Madeley or Danny Miller that'll win it.
Richard Madeley, you're having a laugh, mate.
Richard Madeley's class on this morning. Just a bit of side knowledge. And again, I don't mean to go off on a tangent like we already have massively, but he earns $300,000 hosting Good Morning Britain. $300,000 a year.
He's taken over from Piers Morgan, hasn't he?
He has. If that's the sort of money that's in TV, then snap me up, guys. Like I said, if BBC are listening, you've already heard what we're... Well, BBC or ITV are listening, you've already heard what we're talking about, so get me on the TV. Nah, joking. James, TV aside and everything else that we've just chatted up to you. Yeah. Rubbish about for the last God knows how long. How's your week been, obviously? International break. What you been up to, mate?
Oh, God, nothing much, really. Well, I hate the international break anyway. Like, you know, Albania, San Marino, it's just not what I want to be watching, really. But Watford certainly made up for that. I've not really been up to much. Like, I want to sit here and tell you everything I've done during the week, but I've honestly been really boring and just, you know, just stayed inside, really. So I do apologise about that. But Watford certainly made up for the boredom of the international break. Honestly, you know, well, it was one of the best Watford games, one of the best Watford home games I've ever been to. It's right up there. Wow. So, yeah, I was delighted with it. And yeah, I'm buzzing. I'm still smiling now about it. It was so, so good.
What's the reason that you stayed in? Because you were so scared of this upcoming game because of the absolute frightening form Harry Maguire was on. And he obviously didn't care about his doubters because we all saw his celebration against Albania. Like, was you just sitting there thinking, oh, shit, we've got to come up against this guy. This guy's banging form. He's scoring headers against Albania. Did he score? He scored against San Marino as well. So I was watching it. I was thinking, oh my God, how are we going to cope with this guy?
I was actually so confident when I woke up for the game. But I usually don't even buy a program. But I just thought, you know what? I'll just buy a program today because if we batter them, then I'll regret not buying one. And you know, I was obviously right. You know, James can obviously predict the future because it was absolutely superb. Met Brendan as well as Ben at halftime. Brendan coming over from the Netherlands. It was just a good day all round, really. I just thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I got home and had a lovely glass of orange juice.
James is beyond a boring James Milner account, I think.
Maybe.
Your programme, did you get it off, what's his face? Dave, is it? Programmes, get your programmes.
No, I got it.
Wolfie, that was it.
There's a guy outside Friday.
Get your programmes.
Programmes. I certainly could hear
get your programmes.
Linking back to TV, he always used to be in the audience for Big Brother.
Oh, all the time, mate.
Because it's set at Elstree Studios in Boreham Wood. And
he
always used
cap
to be
on,
there,
didn't he, sometimes?
And he had his Watford cap on, yeah. Yeah, God, people are going to be listening to this thinking, what the bloody hell? They're either going to love it or they're going to hate it. But yeah, for me, not much done. I mean, I've been to Birmingham the last couple of weekends. Two back-to-back wins for my boys, the mighty Alton Ravens. 2-1, the weekend of the international break. Really,
I saw the bicycle kick goal, Mike. That was absolutely banging goal.
Wow.
And then Saturday, that happens. Like, if you haven't seen it, head over to my personal Twitter, and it's on there. I've been trying to get... I've sent it to Soccer AM, hoping that they'll play it on this weekend's show, because it was absolutely unreal. And hats off to the guy who actually listens to this podcast, the guy that captures all the footage. His name's Yatesy. So, Yatesy, if you're listening, thank you very much for capturing the footage, as you always do. He comes to every single game, home and away, no matter where we play. He's not a player. He just likes coming to watch us. So, he's a top, top bloke. So, Yatesy, you are a top bloke, and I hope you're enjoying. Hope you're going to enjoy this podcast, mate.
If it's free on a Monday night, I bang them in every week.
He ain't got that much memory, Ben, on his phone. And, yeah. I don't know, but yeah, let's actually get stuck into the Manchester United game. So as always, we'll start with the lineups. There were three changes from the narrow defeat at Arsenal. So those changes: Rose was out, Loser and Cleverly. Rose was out, Messina was in, and then Kushka was out, as was Tufan, and then it was Loser and. My mind's gone blank. It was Loser and Tom Cleverley that come in. James, staying with you, happy with that side? Happy to see the inclusion of Loser as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Loser's been crying out for a start behind the scenes. You know, our marquee signing, £8 million. And it's been frustrating as fans to kind of watch him, you know, rot away on the bench. And you know, on his show in yesterday, he obviously has bags of talent. You know, I've completely forgotten about the Will Hughes saga now because, you know, Imran Loser looks to be such a replacement for him. Such a good performance. Tom Cleverley as well coming in. You know what you get with Tom. You get work rate every game. He gives his 100% again. You know, that was evident yesterday against Manchester United. And Adam Messina has been playing, you know, quite well lately. And,
he has,
you know,
hasn't he?
He's been keeping Danny Rose out of the team. So, yeah, I was very happy with the lineup. Front three, you know, starts itself really. And, you know, Nicholas Nkoulou, you know, he deserved to start after his performance against Arsenal as well.
Yeah, Ben, the inclusion of Cleverley, I mean, midfield-wise, there wasn't really going to be anyone else. I don't think he would have thrown Gosling in to the mix. You know, he was on the bench. Tufan made the bench as well. So whether that knock was as serious as they first feared, I don't know. But was you maybe a bit worried? I know that Cleverley, how many times on the podcast last season did we sing his praises, his ability to chase down lost balls, to chase everything, and his work rate. But a couple of times this season, you look back to the Brighton game, he was really off the pace. I think there was another game where he was off the pace as well. Was you perhaps a little bit worried with his inclusion coming up against, you know, I know Man U aren't in the best of form and weren't coming into this, but coming up against the quality of player as opposed to the quality of the team cohesion that Man United lack, was you worried about Tom Cleverley coming into that midfield, or was you confident that he was going to be the Tom Cleverley of old and really get stuck in?
Wasn't concerned at all, because like we all say, we know what Tom Cleverley brings to his team, and he's a workhorse and he sets the tempo and he actually starts the press half the time as well. And I think he really suits this system that Ranieri's wanting to implement at Watford, and Ranieri's talked about his philosophy and that. And that suits Tom Cleverley's style of play down to a T. So I wasn't worried that he was starting it. The midfield really picked itself, really, because like you said, Tufan, he picked up a knock on international duty, so he wasn't really going to start. The big inclusion was Imran Loser. I think Claudio Ranieri kind of confused the Watford fans midweek in his press conference when he was asked about Loser playing in an advanced role, and he came out and said he wouldn't be ready for 2 to 3 months in that role. So I think Watford fans were thinking, oh, we're not going to see Loser for 2 to 3 months. And then come 2 o'clock Saturday, we saw Loser in the starting 11. So I think that was probably the biggest inclusion, not the Tom Cleverley bit. But yeah, that midfield kind of picked itself a little bit. You had to put Tom Cleverley in ahead of Dan Gosling. I don't think we're going to see Dan Gosling in a Watford shirt again, if I'm totally honest. I think when it gets to January, we could see him move on, because he's not getting any game time. He's not featured 1 minute in the Premier League this season. I can't remember off the top of my head, even if he's played any Carabao Cup action. at all either. So I do think he's probably on his way out in January. But yeah, pleased with that starting 11. I think that's the best that Ranieri could have selected. Good to see Messina start a game. Purely because we've said this again, I think Danny Rose lacks that pace on the left back, where Messina's got that pace. And like we've all just said, he's actually playing quite well lately.
Yeah. Dan Gosling, 22 minutes he got against Aston Villa in the first game of the season. And he played 79 minutes against Stoke in the Carabao Cup. But I get the point that you were making. Ben, sticking with you, you said their loser, obviously, Ranieri said 2 to 3 months. We wouldn't really be seeing him in that advanced role. It sort of reminds me of the Abdoulaye Doucouré sort of saga, where he only really played because, was it an injury that was it Capu come off against? It was Southampton at home. I can't remember the full ins and outs of it, but basically, Doucouré only got in the team because of injuries. So, and then the rest is history. A bit like Francisco Chiarotto last season. He only got into the team because of injuries. And then, up until the date, I'd say the rest is history. He's not had the best of luck this season with picking up another bloody knock with the Chileans. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. But do you think that loser has now had his chance? He's played against Manchester United and he's put in a bloody good shift as well. So do you think we could see another similar Abdoulaye Doucouré scenario on the cards where he's got in that team purely because of injuries? He's now got to make that position his own.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes you need this bit of luck to fall for you. Losers, he's not even been getting substitute appearances off the bench. Last time we really saw him in the Premier League was against Brighton, and we all know what happened at half time. He was taken off after a poor first half performance. Sometimes you need this luck to fall for you. Kuska picked up that second booking at Arsenal, which meant he was suspended for this game. Tufan picked up that knock at international duty, so that midfield opportunity just opened up for him. So he came in and boy did he take that opportunity. He really introduced himself to Watford Football Club and the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth noting as well, he's been performing for his international side, Morocco. The last 5 international games he's played, but he's been called up, they've won all 5. He's scored in 2, and I don't have the assist stats in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he's assisted in a fair few of those 5 games as well. So he's been ripping it up for Morocco. I think they've qualified for the World Cup. Don't quote me on that, but they've had a very strong international break over the last 2. So fair play to loser. He's had to be patient. He's, you know, knuckled down, and hopefully he can really solidify his place in the Watford starting 11 now, because he certainly put in a performance worthy of keeping that shirt in the midfield. Now, James, going into the game, we come in the back of a international break, and before the international break we lost to Arsenal, but we spoke about that. There were signs against Arsenal where it wasn't all doom and gloom. Yes, going forwards we struggled to create anything really, but in terms of keeping Arsenal at bay at times, I certainly felt we did that. Going into the game, with Manchester United being in the form that they were, was you wary or was you confident? What was your thoughts going into it?
I was honestly, like you probably thought we were playing Tranmere or someone like that. I was so confident. Like every person I spoke to.
We lost to Tranmere, by the way.
Let's not talk about that. I should have picked a different team to make that example.
I know what you mean. But
there's lots and lots of elderly people who sit around me where I sit, and I was speaking to a few of them before kickoff, and I was going, you know, we're going to win 2-0. It's going to be really, really comfortable. And they were going to me, James, you know, we're going to lose 4-5, 6-0. And I was
really?
Not having it. Honestly,
what?
I was so confident going into the game. And, you know, from minute one to when we got that first penalty, you know, I can't really describe it with words. It was pure domination from Watford against, you know, what is one of the biggest teams in the world. And, you know, apart from, you know, the Liverpool game where, you know, making comparisons back to that Liverpool 3-0, I know we won that game and that was a great day, but I don't think we dominated Liverpool like we did against Manchester United on Saturday. It was just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I've gone off on a tangent now, but to answer your question, yes, I was very confident. And, you know, they've been on such a poor run of form before playing us. And, you know, ultimately, we were the final nail in Ole's coffin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they were going into some really, really bad form coming into the game against us. But away from home, they'd actually only lost, I think it was one game prior in the league to us, and that was against Leicester. They lost 4-2. Other than that, they'd been pretty decent away. They hadn't lost away from home all season in the Premier League, other than that Leicester one. So yes, Manchester United have been on a dreadful run of form, but away from home they were still really strong. So in the back of my mind, that did play on my mind a little bit, but. You two were both there. I obviously wasn't there. I wasn't able to watch, unfortunately. I was managing my team. But Ben, James mentions there the sort of atmosphere. Was it comparable to that Liverpool game where we won 3-0? And do you think that the atmosphere was better? Because we've talked about this on the podcast the last couple of times. The atmosphere's perhaps been a little bit flat at Vicarage Road for whatever reason, but do you think the atmosphere carried us over the line, and was it comparable to that Liverpool game back in the 1920 season?
Yeah, no, 100%. You can compare the two. I think Watford fans went there and they smelt blood as much as Watford players did as well. But the fans mm-hmm. actually believed we could get a result. We all saw that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was under a lot of pressure and he kind of had to deliver. United's form was poor. Some of their players were in really poor form as well. And it was a game under the lights at Vicarage Road, and you just know how special they are. I know it was a 3 o'clock kickoff, but it was starting to get dark at that time and the floodlights are on. And you just know the magic of like playing under the floodlights at Vicarage Road. And Watford fans could just sense something was going to happen. And from minute one, the atmosphere was amazing. And then Watford was just quick out the blocks and just were bullying Man United. I think that's the best way of putting it. We were bullying them. We was battering them all over the pitch and we was dominating them. And they didn't like that at all. And I just think the moment we saw the players react like that, it just gave us even more hope and belief. And then we just gave them that extra 10-15% in the stands as well, and then the players was like, right, okay, then they fully believe in what we can do, and it just carried on a bit like that. But yeah, there's definitely comparisons between the Liverpool game and the Manchester United game. I said to James at half time when I saw him, that's the best half of football I've ever seen at Vicarage Road.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was that good. It was that dominating. It was that good of football. Man United didn't have a sniff. I think they had
other than the goal.
No, in the first half. In the first half, I think they had two chances. I think Foster maved them, but there was comfortable saves. Apart from that, they didn't have a sniff at all. It was easy, and that's against Manchester United, like James said, one of the biggest clubs in the world. I know they're not up their footballing standards at the moment; they're up there for the size of a club. But it's Manchester United. We made them look like a Championship side or a League One side. That's how good we were in that first half.
And you know, I kind of felt I was sitting there, and you know, it was a bit strange because you know I felt that Southampton and Newcastle gave us a much harder test than Manchester United did on Saturday. It was unbelievable to actually be there and kind of experience, you know, how bad they were. But as Ben said, you know, Watford were absolutely unbelievable. Every single player who stepped onto the pitch was 10 out of 10. Every player contributed positively to the game, you know, whether that's the substitutions coming on or the players who started. It was fantastic. And as Ben said to me at half time, it was, you know, it was one of the best halves of football I've ever seen Watford play.
I think the maybe a good way to explain it was, we might not have the players like for like ability wise. You know, you look at some of the names in that squad, and yeah, they're not playing to their potential at the moment. But you would say that they quality wise they are better than some of our players. You know, they've got Cristiano Ronaldo, for God's sake, and you know, look at his decorative career. But I think I always relay back to what Troy Deeney said once after the Arsenal game, and he said, I might not have the quality to compete with the likes of an Ozil or whoever, a class player like that, but if you want to take it sort of if in terms of fighting and in terms of grit and determination and rolling your sleeves up, he's going to win that battle every time. And it sounds like that's exactly what we did. We might not have played the best football. We might not have, we might not be this tippy-tappy style football team. We might not have the best quality, if you're matching us up against them like for like. But we're going to give you a bloody good game. We're going to give you a tough time. We're going to be in your face. We're going to be pressing you. We're going to be physical. We're going to be direct sometimes. And teams like Manchester United and the big boys, they don't like that. They don't know how to deal with it. A team like Man U are a wounded animal. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says we need to come back and we need to, come back like the wounded animal that we are against Watford. And they, they probably come back as a dead chicken by the bloody looks of it. But there was
one point in the first half that made me laugh, and it was like how the mighty have fallen with Manchester United. It was like 39 minutes on the clock. Watford were, I think, was 2-0 up at that stage, and United fans were chanting attack, 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 attack. I was like, you're singing that to Watford.
I remember that.
It was 2-0 Watford, and Man United, their fans were getting frustrated, and it was like, yeah, you're not as big as you used to be, boys.
No, do you know what, though? It's so, so true, and, I'll probably get a little bit of stick for saying what I'm about to say, but as most people all over the UK do, part of my family do support Man United. I mean, my cousin is a season ticket holder at Manchester United, so I have always sort of had a little bit of a soft spot for Manchester United growing up because, family, before I was a Watford fan. Growing up, I was, surrounded by a Watford fan in the form of my old man, and then my grandparents were Manchester United fans, and as I say, my cousin's a Manchester United season ticket holder. So I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for Manchester United. And it is crazy how far they've fallen since Fergie's left. Now, I don't want to make this all about Manchester United, but it is absolutely mental. It just goes to show that, yeah, you can spend all the money in the world, but Ferguson was obviously, Ferguson was world-class to sort of piecing it all together. And I think it's just, it is crazy. I was saying to people in the lead, as I say, everyone knows a Manchester United fan, no matter where you're from. And I was saying to Man United supporting friends, I was saying, I was actually more confident if we were going to play at Old Trafford. And as far as in my lifetime, we've never won at Old Trafford. We always seem to get tonked or we always seem to lose. So the fact that I was more confident going to Old Trafford used to be, you wouldn't have a cat in hell's chance. You wouldn't. It was mad. I remember when we went there in 06, 07, the season we come up on the Boothroyd. Now, Christ, I was watching a game from that season the other day, and you look at some of the names we had. We were not ready for that season, but we got tonked about 4-1, I think it was, at Old Trafford, and you just were never confident going to Old Trafford. I'd be confident going to Old Trafford now. I'm confident playing Manchester United at home. We've beat them twice before. Obviously, we've beaten them the third time at home now in recent years. We beat them 3-1 under Matt Zari. We beat them, was it 2-0 under Nigel Pearson as well in the relegation season. So I don't fear Manchester United. And if I'm a Manchester United fan listening to this, my blood would be boiling. I'd be thinking, this is Watford. The disrespect we've got over the last couple of days, Jamie Carragher, he can absolutely do one. I don't know if anyone's seen this, but he basically said, shouldn't be losing to a team like Watford 4-1. I watched them the other week and they were crap, basically, is what he was saying. And, I mean, it's lazy journalism from his part because he might well have watched us the other week. And yes, we have been crap, but the disrespect is...
Shouldn't lose to a side like Watford 4-1, but we beat Liverpool 3-0 a couple of years ago.
it's disrespectful. And it does my head in. It's never... And so many people have made this point on social media. It's never Watford did really, really well. It's Manchester United had a bad day at the office. I must say, though, hats off to Alan Shearer on Match of the Day. He did say, Watford have been at the races today. I flicked on Final Score, and Ashley Williams was doing our game, and he actually said, you know, Manchester United have been really, really poor. And I forget the presenter's name of it now. I think it's something Mohammed. I can't remember what his name is, but he said, and how have Watford looked? And Ashley Fletcher, you know, he gave us credit. So as well as Alan Shearer, Ashley Fletcher, but the main thing on social media, the big voices on social media is it always reads out as, oh, Man U have had a bad game, or when we played Liverpool, Liverpool have had a bad game. No one talks about Watford having a good game. It's always a narrative with the big six, and I say that in, you know, I say that in quotation marks, but it does my head in. It really, really does. But you know, we as Watford fans, only we will know how well we've played, and you know, we absolutely bullied them, as you boys have said. Now, I just want to talk about the goals. You know, we've obviously been talking about the match itself, but we did. As you said, you know, that first half, Ben, we were dominant and it was almost too easy, as you described. 6 minutes in, clumsy challenge by McTominay, Josh King down. It took Moss a while to point to the spot. I was a bit surprised at that, but in the end it was given. Sarr stepped up, De Gea saved it, Kiko Femenia ran in and belted it in the back of the net, and it was brilliant. And I thought, yes, Kiko's got his goal. Absolutely brilliant. But then VAR looked at it and there was like, it seemed, I think there's been a little bit of confusion around this. Now, I think some people thought it was because of Femenia's encroachment, but I think you boys summed it up to me before we started recording. It's actually because there was a double encroachment from Manchester United's part. And because the original penalty was saved, because Manchester United encroached, we then retake it, regardless of if we followed it up with a rebound and scored. So, unfortunately for us, you know, Sarr stepped up again and De Gea saved it again. And, yeah, it was unfortunate. Now, Ben, you actually said at the time, because we were messaging, I messaged you at half-time and we were messaging sort of through the game, and you said you was actually surprised Sarr stepped up to take the second one.
Yeah, well, when the penalty was given, it was King picked up the ball straight away because he was the one fouled, and I think he fancied taking it. And then there was maybe a bit of a Sarr taking the ball away from King. So then when things like that happen, it's never a good look, is it? And then you think, whoa, maybe their heads aren't in the right spot for taking this. Sarr stepped up, and I thought the first penalty, he took it really well, but it was a good save from De Gea. It was just a poor penalty from Ismail Assar the second time round. It was very slow, but it was very, there's not much pace behind it. The placement was even worse. It just went straight to De Gea, and it was a really comfortable save for him. If that was me, I would have said to Sarr, look, you had your opportunity. You've missed it. Fortunately, we've been given the opportunity to take it again. Let's give it to Josh King. We've been very fortunate in the past where we've had Troy Deeney step up for penalties. So we've had that designated penalty taker. I don't think Ismail Assar's really a penalty taker for Watford. And I look at Josh King's record at Bournemouth, where he was a penalty taker and he scored pretty much all the penalties that he stepped up and took. So for me, I'd want Josh King to take the opportunity there to slot the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, it was weird to hear that Sarr had stepped up to take the penalty. And I always think, you know, it happened to one of my lads, and I listen, Saturday amateur football is a lot different to the Premier League, but it happened to one of my lads in a cup game, and he took the penalty and it had to be retaken. The first one was saved, and then he took the penalty again and he went down the same direction and it was saved again. I always think if you're gonna retake a penalty, then I would at least change it up. I would at least go another way, or I don't know whether that'd be too obvious, or good, you know, I'm usually at the other end trying to save it because I've played in goal before. So it's it is odd that Josh King didn't step up and take it. He scored 18 penalties in total, Josh King has. You know, that's for for Norway and for Bournemouth. So, yeah, he's actually scored one against David De Gea, but they lost 5-2 the season they went down. So, not quite as... He knows how to put the ball past David De Gea. And you mentioned there, we usually have Troy Deeney. That's just sparked the thought in my mind that the last three times we've played Manchester United, it's not the last three times, but we've had three penalties against Manchester United in recent years, in the 2-0 win, the 3-1 win, and then the 4-1 win. In fact, the game which we didn't beat them, the two games which we didn't beat them, I don't think we scored a penalty. Some record against Manchester United. They really do not like playing at Vicarage Road. But Josh King did get his chance, and it was brilliant work by Dennis to bring the ball down, because the ball come in and he's plucked it out of the air really nicely. Dennis could well have just absolutely hit it and just seen where it ended up, but he took it down. He played in Josh King. I actually thought it was really poor goalkeeping from David Hay. I was very surprised. It looked like it was more a placement shot as opposed to just hitting it and hoping.
There wasn't an awful lot of power actually behind the shot, was there?
No, so I was very surprised it went in. But nonetheless, Josh King did tap it in. His fourth goal of the season. His first one at Vicarage Road. His first official one at Vicarage Road. Obviously, he had one short off against Newcastle. James, he's really coming into his own now, isn't he? Not only has he scored a hat-trick against Everton, he scored against another old club in the former Manchester United. It's just a shame Bournemouth aren't in the division, because he probably would have scored against them. But he's really coming into his own, isn't he? And we're really starting to see the Josh King that we know is in there, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. And it's just, for me, it's just really, really good to have such, you know, a versatile number nine. You know, Troy Deeney had very specific attributes that you have to play to kind of get Troy into the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas Josh King, he can play in the left, he can play centrally, he can run in behind, he can hold up the ball. And in this instance, he found a little bit of space, ball into him from Dennis through some lovely play. And, you know, it's essentially a tap-in. And as you say, poor goalkeeping from De Gea. But yeah, delighted for King. Should have had a goal against Newcastle, really. That was disallowed. But he gets his goal at Vicarage Road. And, yeah, delighted for him. And, you know, thoroughly deserved at that point in the game. As me and Ben said earlier, Watford was so, so dominant throughout the first half. And, you know, richly deserved from Josh King.
Yeah, I still stand by what I said in the previous part. I think double figures for Josh King this season. He could easily go on to get between 10 and 15 goals this season if he carries on in the rich vein of form that he's in. And it's not just his goals as well, it's his overall play. You know, we've missed that. You know, Troy Deeney used to be like that. Obviously, towards the end of his Watford career, it didn't quite, you know, work out for him in terms of his, you know, his overall style of play was a lot slower, and you know he wasn't as physical as he used to be. But we know there's a long catalogue of, you know, injuries that he was dealing with. But Josh King is the striker we've been screaming out for a good while now. So it's brilliant that we've had him. Another man who I think deserves a lot of praise recently. He's been getting a lot of stick on social media for his YouTube and antics, and he got a lot of stick after the Arsenal vlog as well. We won't go into that. We could, you know, it's opening a can of worms, so we won't say anything about that. But Ben Foster, again, he two brilliant saves to deny Marcus Rashford. And Ben Foster overall, Ben, I think was superb against his former employees, wasn't he?
He was a rock, mate, at the back. There was a point in the second half where he was one-on-one with... Ronaldo was running one with him, and he made such a massive vital save. If that goes in, I think United would have drawn level at that point. And United were starting to turn up the gears, and we were getting deeper and deeper, and United were seeing more balls, and there was getting more shots and goals. So it was a massive save from Ben Foster, but it was very comfortable Saturday. He looks like he's got his mojo back. He seems very confident at the moment. He's back to the best, and the football goalkeeping debate is open. Is over. Who is the better goalkeeper at Watford? And I think Ben Foster has shown that he probably deserves to be at Watford number one at the moment, and he definitely is better than Dan Batman at the moment on performances.
I must admit, I thought I was listening to an audiobook of 50 Shades of Grey there, Ben. You're on about deeper and deeper and seeing loads of balls, but anyway.
Bit random, mate.
Yeah, no, no, it just popped into my head. So I thought, yeah, you guys can share what propped into my head. But no, back into football. You know, Foster, as you've just said there, Ben, I think the debate is over now. Do I think we'll see Dan Batman leave? It's looking more and more likely, isn't it? You know, Foster's been brilliant the last couple of games. And Batman, I think he played over the international break. I think he actually missed one game. He didn't play one of the games for Austria. So whether that was just a case of freshening it up for Austria or what, I don't know. And then obviously with the signing of Okoye, I think it's pronounced, I think that pretty much seals Dan Batman's fate. So that will be interesting. And as well, it was announced in the Athletic article, because Adam Levensole did an article on the goalkeeping situation. I can't remember how many years off the top of my head. James, you're usually good at this stuff, but the Pontus Dahlberg actually signed a new contract with Watford just before he went on loan to Doncaster Rovers.
I believe it was until 2027, so a five-six-year extension for Dahlberg, which is fantastic, really. But again, as I mentioned before, it baffles me why the club doesn't announce these things.
Yeah,
yeah,
frustrating, isn't it? Don't keep anyone in the loop. It's like it's got to be top secret or something, but the fans deserve to know. And it's like, that's good news to say as well. Like, there was news about Cyril to sign a long-term contract the other week. We haven't had an official announcement by it, so it's lucky that we've got people like Adam and Levental who digs a bit deeper and finds out this information to keep us in the loop.
Absolutely. Back to the game. 1-0, we were up. The dominance was paying off. We, as Watford fans, we do know that 1-0, well, for any team, 1-0 is not a very comfortable lead. But we didn't worry. That earlier penalty, double penalty miss, obviously didn't affect Ismaïla Sarr, because Ben, he made it 2-0 on the stroke of half-time, pretty much. But a big, big shout-out to Kiko Femenir on this. It was Femenir and Sarr, that link that we saw so much last season, that worked so much. Firstly, how good was Kiko Femenir? Because you mentioned about that before we started recording. And secondly, Sarr, a very, very relieved person to score. He did apologise to the crowd, which I thought, you know, that was absolutely superb. That shows that he does care. He hasn't been trying to throw in the towel in the last few performances. It's obviously a weight off his mind. So, yeah, how do you think Kiko Femenir? Brilliant, Ben. And delighted for Ismaïla Sarr to get back on the score sheet.
Yeah, firstly, Kiko Femenir, best defensive performance I think I've seen from him. It's up there with that performance he had against Wolves when he had Traoré in his back pocket back in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago now. That was a really good defensive display, but he topped it at the weekend for Manchester United. We've all heard about how good Kiko is going forward, and we know what he brings to the side. And there's been question marks about his ability defending, but he was solid. He was really good. He was getting stuck in winning challenges. Good link-up play with Sarr again, and he picked up that assist, didn't he, with Ismaïla Sarr. And what a finish from Ismaïla Sarr.
Yeah.
That's the goal of the game for me. The way he finished that, especially after missing those two penalties as well, right into the bottom corner. De Gea had no chance, and my heart felt for him when he went over to the crowd. I just was like, you don't need to apologise to the crowd, mate. Look, it all happens. I think we all forget how young Ismaïla Sarr is, and we put a lot of pressure onto him. He's the same age as Emmanuel Dennis, and we don't give Emmanuel Dennis as much stick as Ismaïla Sarr. Ismaïla Sarr is our top goal scorer, and we the fans get on his back straight away. We need to show him a bit more respect. Got to remember, he's a young guy. He's going to make mistakes. He's still learning. He's got massive potential, but he's going to learn from these mistakes. So just let's all just get off his back a little bit and just let him play his football and enjoy his football. Because he shows that he loves his football club. He cares. And that apology to the crowd, it was just like heartwarming, wasn't it? It was just like, come on, mate, you don't need to do that. We appreciate it, but you don't need to say sorry. We're sorry for getting on your back.
Yeah, and Tom cleverly, apparently he was saying to him, you're the man, you're the man. So, you know, cleverly a real leader in there, and that will definitely, you know, I'm sure he'll be, you know, giving as much praise as he can to all the lads. So it's good to see that team cohesion as well. So going into the break, 2-0 up, that dominance paying off. Surely, you know, it was all going to be all okay from there, and you know, we were good value for the win as it stood. Second half starts, Manchester United, as much as they've been struggling, I think it was always going to happen because the quality they do have in that team. They do get a goal back. Donny van der Beek, you know, he's been frozen out by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and he's the one that ended up scoring the last goal in Solskjaer's 3-year reign. So that quite ironic, that. But maybe, James, was there a feel of, ooh, this could go a little bit wrong? You know, Man U start to get a feel of the ball a little bit. They pull a goal back. As Ben said earlier, Cristiano Ronaldo at 2-1 went through 1-1. He would have been offside if the ball would have been put in the back of the net. But still, you know, he bared down on Ben Foster, and Foster made a brilliant save. Was there that agitated feeling within the stadium, could you feel? Or was you, do you think it, overall people were still confident and it was just a freak sort of 10-15 minute spell where Manchester United got a grasp of the game?
Yeah, I was worried. And, you know, when that goal went in, the crowd just went a little bit quieter than they were in the first half. And the atmosphere was still good. But, you know, as you say, they've got superb players, world-class players. And, you know, how many times have we seen Manchester United, you know, come back from 1-2-0 down to mm-hmm. win the game 3-2? And rightly so, because they should be doing that. They have players to do that. And I was concerned. It was a great header by Ronaldo down to Donny van der Beek, who basically just headed into an open net. Yeah. And as you say, after that, Ronaldo had another chance through Ben Foster. He had a header that went over the bar. Bruno Fernandes had a volley that just went wide of the post. So, you know, they were creating a lot of opportunities, but we held on. And ultimately, all of that led to Maguire picking up his second yellow card of the day.
Yeah, what a stupid idiot, by the way. Like, I know I took the piss out of him at the start of the podcast, but fancy diving in like that. Was it cleverly he dived in on?
Yeah, cleverly picked up the ball and, you know, Harry Maguire basically just wiped him out.
Why would you dive in like that on a yellow card? Why?
Yellow card that he picked up about 6-7 minutes earlier as well, so it was fresh in his mind as well.
Yeah, because he brought down Saar, didn't he? There was a ball over the top and he brought down Saar, and I'm glad we don't have to dissect what was trying to go through his head at that time. But yeah, idiotic, I think, is probably the best use. They did think they equalised, you know, 78 minutes on the clock. You'd think with them down to 10 men and with morale low within the squad, you thought maybe a sigh of relief. The ball was in the net. Ronaldo scored, or so he thought, 78 minutes on. Massive sigh of relief, though, because he was offside, luckily. So the last sort of 10 minutes, that's when the heart starts pumping for me. And then there was 5 minutes added on, and you're like, oh, my God, we've got to hold on. Yes, they're down to 10 men. Watford have got to hold on for a one-goal cushion. We've got a one-goal cushion to hold on. There's 5 minutes. I was, like, pacing up and down with final score on. And I was like, please, please, please. Then, 3 minutes in, the Brazilian, João Pedro, scored against David De Gea, right? 3-1. I just want to say, I am absolutely delighted for him. He had the unfortunate passing of his stepfather just days ago. Now he scored his first Premier League goal, and he scored his first Premier League goal against Manchester United. as Ben mentioned earlier, yes, they're not playing very well at the moment, but they are still one of the biggest clubs in the world. So all of that, and then the thing that got me, the celebration, it was in tears. I was watching it, and I was welling up, to be honest. And then the thing that also got me was Josh King, the embrace that Josh King gave him. I was like, oh, my God, like, this is like, you know, that really got, you know, there was a lump in my throat, definitely, watching that. But, Ben, how delighted are you for João Pedro? He gets his first Premier League goal, and that was pretty much the one to wrap up the game as well. So it was a pretty important goal as well. And obviously, with everything that's been going on as well, we can only be delighted for him, really, can't we?
Yeah, it got me choked up, mate, seeing that. You just knew how much it meant to him, to his family, and to his stepdad. But unfortunately, he didn't get to see his boy score in the Premier League. But he was shining down on him. What a fantastic finish from João Pedro. Yeah. I know there's question marks over De Gea, maybe should have done better, but that was João Pedro after he just had a shot saved from De Gea about 10-15 seconds prior to that as well, which he probably thought he was going to score from as well. So it was how he was going to react from it, and he didn't dwell on it. He stayed alive in the box. The ball fell to him, he just smashed it past De Gea. And you could see the moment it went in, he had a little smile. And then he realised what he's just done. He's just scored against Manchester United. You just knew how much it meant to him. And he kissed his tattoo on his wrist. It must be something to do with his family. And then pointing up to the sky. And man, it was so lovely to see. And like you say, the embrace from Josh King. I saw another angle where Trusikon went over as well. And it gave him the eyes of like saying, I'm proud of you, mate. And he clapped him as well. And then there's another angle when they were starting to walk back. And Danny Rose actually went onto the pitch and hugged him.
I didn't see that.
So that was lovely to see as well. And it just shows the whole togetherness in this squad as well. And he uploaded a photo on Instagram where it was a photo of him pointing to the sky for his stepfather and saying, that was for you. And it just, all the Watford teammates that he's got was commenting on it, showing him support, saying they was proud of him. Even players that we've got out on loan. Zinchenko commented on it as well, and it was just lovely to see. And it just shows the togetherness this Watford squad's got at the moment, where whenever it's going tough for their mate, their colleague, he's struggled the last couple of weeks, and they're all there for him, and you could see the support and the love for him, and it was just lovely to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you've highlighted it brilliantly there. The team togetherness at the moment, even though things haven't been, you know, great for us this season, we are where we are in the league, but and you know we haven't, you know, won in a few games. The team togetherness really is there, and I think that within itself can be a factor as to why I think we can stay up. I genuinely do believe we can stay up, and I think Ranieri's built. Going to be able to build something here, and you know the scenes at full time as well, absolutely superb. It didn't finish 3-1, it did indeed finish 4-1. Ben Foster rounding off a superb day for him, getting an assist. I felt a bit sorry for Chucho Hernandez here because he's gone to absolutely bollock it and he's just missed it. It's just a complete air shot.
I'm sure he got a touch on that, by the way.
I'm sure he did. I thought he got a touch on it as well, but I think Ben Foster definitely deserves the assist. It sort of rounds off his day really because he was so good. It's classic old style football, isn't it? You know, route one, Ben Foster, massive hoof up the pitch, and then you know next thing you know, we get an attack from it and Emmanuel Dennis scores and he makes it 4-1. James, Emmanuel Dennis, what a signing he's turning out to be for the money we got him for as well. He's been absolutely superb, hasn't he?
Oh, mate. I mean, arguably, he's been more important this season than is Milo Sarr. I talked about on the Watford Way yesterday, a stat. And, you know, he's been involved in 9 Premier League goals this season, 4 goals, 5 assists. Only Mohamed Salah has more combined goal involvements than Emmanuel Dennis this season. And, you know, £3.5 million, surely, you know, bargain of the season, signing of the season, great finishing into the bottom left-hand corner. I'll tell you what he does have to do. He's got to stop taking his top off when he scores because he keeps getting booked.
Yeah. I was going to say, James, you've missed that one important stat, and that's the 6 yellow cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's not on that front. It's not great, but look, in all seriousness, is, you know, what a bargain, what a player, and, you know, very, very lucky to have him after, you know, all the question marks around him when he signed. You know, he's shut us all up basically, and yeah, it's a great way to cap off the evening.
Absolutely. And
can I just say something about Emmanuel Dennis as well? I love how well he's performing at the moment, but it's kind of worrying me a little bit because the African Cup of Nations coming up soon. Yeah. He's not been involved in the Nigeria squad off late. If this form continues, he'll get called up as well and we'll be missing him in January. So I kind of want him to calm down a little bit.
Well, my boss told me something even more worrying. I can't remember how many days exactly, but with the African Cup of Nations, they have to be there so many days before the first game of the actual tournament. So not their country's first game, the first game of the tournament. I'm pretty sure he said it was 2 weeks before. And
yeah,
I think
Boxing Day, Mike, we lose all our African players.
And I think Senegal are like hot favourites to win it. So we could be without Sarr for quite some time. I don't know the rules in terms of when the team gets knocked out. Are they allowed to come straight back? But yeah, we'll have to cross that bridge when it comes to it. I'm not looking forward to it. But just another thing as well, basically to round up on the game and Emmanuel Dennis. I just want to point out a tweet here that we received from Paul Fiander Turner. He said, and I think he summed it up perfectly. Bad attitude, they said. Troublemaker, they said. Doesn't play for the team, they said. Sulks a lot, they said. Glad to be rid of him, they said. They were wrong. Now he's a hornet, he's found his home. That rightly got 53 likes because he's absolutely bang on. So if you're listening, you know, absolutely hats off to you there. Brilliantly summed up because he really is coming into his own, and like Ben says, I'm a little bit worried that he's going to get called up by Nigeria. However, Ben, have you considered that Isaac's success seems to have found his feet in Italian football and has scored a couple of times? So hopefully they're looking at Isaac's success and he can be the key man to lead Nigeria to success in, pardon the pun, in the African Cup of Nations. A brilliant, brilliant win. Something we needed as well, guys, because Norwich picked up their back-to-back wins, so they picked up 3 points under new boss Dean Smith. Newcastle picked up a point against Brentford. Burnley picked up a point against Crystal Palace. And luckily, Leeds United lost. So no one actually gained points on us, but still, that's 3 of the 4 below us that actually did pick up points over the weekend. So I think even more crucial that we did go and win. And obviously Aston Villa won as well. Our records, by the way, are identical. We've won the same games, we've drawn the same games, we've lost the same games, we've scored the same amount of goals, we've conceded the same amount of goals. Manchester United have now actually conceded more goals than us. I think it's one more. They've conceded 21, we've conceded 20. So really, really important to pick up that victory, especially going into a game against Leicester, who at the moment they're not playing too well. Now, I know over the years we don't tend to win too much at the King Power, but we going into it, I would be feeling slightly confident. I would still take a draw at this stage because Leicester on a day can be dangerous and, you know, have those sort of players that can turn it on. And, you know, whether Rodgers will want to prove a point at the moment because of the vacant position at Manchester United, he has been linked with that. So, and also as well, if on the off chance you are a Leicester fan listening to this, Rodgers has said that he does want to stay with you. Don't believe it. He said the same about us. So, yeah, just warning you about that one, guys. But, I would definitely take a point going into the next game against Leicester. But overall, guys, I think we can all agree a brilliant, brilliant win for Watford against Manchester United. And it's absolutely superb. Ben, just quickly, because I know you've got to shoot off any second now. Going into that Leicester game, based on obviously the 4-1 demolition job of Manchester United, what are your thoughts? Would you take a point or do you think, nah, sod that. If we can beat Man U, we can go and get 3 points at Leicester.
Well, look at Leicester being in the same situation as Manchester United at the moment. Low in confidence, they're not playing great. I think Rodgers is under a little pressure. His head's maybe getting turned by the Manchester United job. I don't see why we can't go there and get 3 points. Claudio Ranieri's going back to his old stomping ground where he's highly respected, but he'll go there wanting to pick up 3 points. He's not just going back there just to say hello to his old friends. He's going there to pick up 3 points, and I strongly believe that we can get something out of Leicester, especially after seeing our performance against Man United. But Ranieri summed it up in his press conference: it's consistency we need now. We can put in a performance. We've seen it against Everton. We've seen it against Manchester United. We need consistency now. So we need to pick up points on the road at Leicester. And I do think we can do that.
Yeah. James, going into the Leicester game, what are your initial thoughts?
What are my initial thoughts? I mean, funnily enough, I'm not as confident as I was going into the Manchester United game, which seems crazy.
Yeah.
I think Ben makes a good point. Leicester, again, like United, are in poor form. Obviously, Brendan Rodgers used to manage Watford. Claudio Ranieri used to manage Leicester. There's some sort of dynamic going on there. Mm. You know, I'd take a draw. I definitely would take a draw. Our games after that are Chelsea and Man City, which are very, very tough. But look, I don't see any reason why we can't win the game. We've just beat Manchester United, you know, one of the biggest teams in the world. They had Ronaldo, they had Bruno Fernandes, they had Rashford, they had Sancho, and they couldn't really lay a finger on us. So we've just got to go to Leicester with belief. And, you know, how often do we beat a big team or get a good result and then throw it away the following week? We got to stop that pattern. Yeah. And yeah, hopefully we'll get something from the game.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw, and I will absolutely take that. As I've said, Ben has had to shoot off, so it is just me and James to see out the pod. James, I know you're quite outlandish with your score predictions. Have you got an outlandish one for this week, or are you going more sensible?
No, very outlandish this week. I'll go 4-0 to Watford.
Jesus Christ. If only we'd asked for... If only we talked about the Man U game last week, I wonder if you'd have gone outlandish then, because you probably would have been close to being right, to be honest. But
yeah,
as I say, you know, Leicester is the next one. Also as well, I was told by a Leicester City supporting friend that obviously, the reason it's on a Sunday is because of their Europa League involvement. They have to win that game if they're to stay in the Europa League. So it's a big, big game for Leicester. They're at home to Legia Warsaw, I believe it is. So they have to win that game. So maybe he's gonna have a bit of a dilemma in terms of he needs to put a full strength side out on Thursday, because it's such an important game, and maybe they can still be a little bit tired going into our game on Sunday. But fingers crossed we can get a result against there, because as you've said, and as Ben has said, it's all about reaction now. Yes, we've had a brilliant result against Man U at home, but we need to follow it up. We had a brilliant result against Everton. We didn't follow it up. So, yeah, it's all about following it up. So hopefully we can do that and keep climbing the table, because if we get another win, we'd be on 16 points. We'd be occupying good company. Yet so many people, pundit-wise, seem to think we've had a shocking season. You know, I think we're on the same points as Brentford. How many people have I heard say, Brentford have had a good start? Oh, but Watford haven't. We're on the same points. So, and I think with Dean Smith taking over at Norwich, I think that's a very, very good appointment. And I think they're going to hit a bit of run of form as well. So we need to start picking up points, because teams below us...
I'd love to keep a clean sheet away at Leicester as well. First clean sheet of the season.
Yeah. I agree. But I do unfortunately think it'll be 1-1. Jamie Vardy always seems to get the better of us. And I know what will happen. I think I said this on the pod the other week. He'll go through 1-1 and Foster will come out and bring him down, and it'll be a penalty and Vardy will score, because that has happened various times against Watford. So yeah, but Ben Foster's no stranger to making penalty saves. I think he's got the record for the most penalty saves in the Premier League.
So
he's no stranger to making penalty saves. So maybe if Vardy was to get one, maybe Foster would save it. But just a few bits of Watford news to finish the pod on. Something which I did want to mention was There was some very sad news that come out of Watford's fan base the other day. A gentleman called Kev Norman, who hadn't missed a Watford or England game since the 90s, sadly passed away the other day. I didn't know Kev personally, as many people on social media, you obviously pick it up, and you know he was quite obviously a avid Watford and England fan, as I've just said, having not missed a game, home or away, since the 90s. So very, very sad news, and I'm glad to hear that it was his life was well sort of celebrated. There was a minute's applause in the 60th minute on the Manchester United game. So our thoughts go out to his friends and family. Some very, very sad news, which we've, unfortunately had to bring. So like I say, thoughts with the friends and family of Kev Norman. And then just so a bit of injury news, because as we know, Watford always seem to have a lot of injury news, Christian Cabaselli is progressing well in his recovery from a hamstring strain. He's now running outside and hoping to rejoin the squad for full training in the next 2 weeks, which is brilliant. And Ken Sema, who withdrew from the Sweden squad with an MCL injury to his knee ahead of the international break, is also working hard on his rehabilitation, and he'll also start looking at running outside next week. And then Quado Bra has undergone surgery on his fractured ankle and is in the process of beginning his rehab, while long-term absentee Peter Etebo is currently working hard on his recovery in the gym. And then just a bit of sort of marketing news, really, I think, James. It's quite an interesting one. It's definitely one that's divided opinion on social media. The daughter of Gianpaolo Pozzo and Watford's marketing strategic coordinator, Magda Pozzo, has claimed that she is planning to sell the naming rights to Vicarage Roads. Now, obviously, Udinese, I think it's the Dacia Arena. I don't know if I pronounced that right. The car brand. I think that they were shirt sponsors as well. Yeah, I've Udinese a few years ago. But, James, like I say, this one's sort of divided opinion. We won't go into great detail of it, but some people say, well, it'll always be Vicarage Road. Why are they going to do this, et cetera, et cetera. But then if you look on the other hand, if it brings in more investment, I think it's quite clear at the moment that, you know, you're looking at other teams. West Ham had a Czech billionaire invest, which just sort of eases a load off the Pozzos. When they took over, brilliant. Yeah, the money we had, the resources we had available for the division we had was superb. We're now in the Premier League. We're now in 2021. We probably could do with extra investment. We probably, you know, could do with an investor coming in and looking at investing so many million pounds. So that maybe a weight is taken off the Pozzos' shoulders. So what's your view on it? Are you all for it or are you dead against it?
I'm all for it as long as it's in the right circumstances. Obviously, you know, the comparison I would make would be, you know, my cashie at Newcastle, you know, putting up the Sports Direct brand in everywhere, everywhere that you can see in a stadium, you know, on the outside, on the inside, in the concourses. I wouldn't want Vicarage Road to look like that. But as you say, it's quite evident with the loans Watford are taking out that there is a little bit of an issue there in terms of revenue and you know, investing into the squad. I think Watford only have a little bit of wiggle room left in terms of financial fair play and how much we can spend on players. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, I agree with the fans who are saying it will always be Vicarage Road, because, you know, that's what and you, Mike, will call Watford, we'll call it the Vic. And if it's the Nissan Arena, the Ford Arena, whatever investors come in, as long as we're doing it for the greater good of the club, I don't have a big problem with it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you just said, it will always be the Vic, no matter if we get a sponsorship or what. It will always be the Vic. But if it provides, you know, extra investment, then as you've just said, I am all for it, because it is something that we need. And interesting, you mentioned the loans there. There was a little bit of worry. Adam Leventhal has released a article on The Athletic, so go and check that out. It explains it perfectly, and yeah, there's nothing to worry about. We're not doing it. You know, they're doing it within good reason, basically. But we really do thank you for listening to the podcast. Like I say, it's been a week since we've been able to do one because of the stupid international break, and it has been a little bit later because Ben went to see McFly. But never mind, we are back. We got to talk about that win that I was so hoping that we got at the end of each podcast, and let's just hope this run continues. And like I say, I'll be happy with a draw against Leicester. We will be back next week, whether it's on the Sunday, whether it's on the Monday. We will communicate that to you guys. But till then, stay safe and come on, yawns.
Sports Social Podcast Network.